sights to show you.
Welcome to the 28th episode of the Sirens of Scream, the geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. I'm Jackie DeVore, and I'm here with Melissa Megan.
Hello.
And Sierra Halk.
Hi.
And today we are joined by June Gregory.
Hello.
Okay, so what we like to do on episodes that we have a guest is we like to start out with a segment that we call Grill the Guest. So, June, we've got some questions for you. You ready?
All right, bring it.
Okay. So the first one is, if you were in a slasher film, which character would you want to be, and which character would you realistically be?
Well, I would want to be the one doing the slashing, I think,
and not one of the victims. This is the first time we've gotten that answer.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I think that realistically, I would be that anxious and fearful friend that people probably should be listening to, but whose concerns get overlooked, and I probably bite it pretty early on in the film.
No. Oh. And the second question is, have you ever had a supernatural encounter?
I believe so. Can say most recently, and it's pretty positive, my deceased mother, I feel like a few times, has contacted me with funny things about where to find a lost necklace and things like that. As far as anything more sinister, I've definitely been in some places where I've had a sense of something a little bit off. Jackie, I don't know if you remember the old abandoned bleachery where Walmart used to be. Yeah, that's got to be one of the most intense places that I've been to.
Yeah, that in the abandoned asylums over there in East Asheville are so creepy to be in. We'll discuss this here in a second, but June and I go way back. So the third question, though, is what were you for Halloween last year?
Oh, let's see. I usually do several costumes, and I should remember this easily. Medusa.
Oh, yeah, I do remember seeing that. Yeah, that was cool. Speaking of which, I know it's technically the month of June right now, but no, it's July.
It's July. Right now. Oh, it is July now. Cool. Yeah.
But I already have my Halloween costume planned. Guys, I think I'm going to be Darkwing Duck.
Ooh, I support that. Wow, I've never seen that done.
I think it's going
to
be.
I don't know that anybody's thought of that. Oh, yes. I still vaguely remember the theme song to that, too.
Vaguely. Damn, I sing that often. I'm going to dress Drew up like probably Negaduck or Quacker Jack. Yeah. It's going to be rad.
Do you remember Count Duckula? That one just popped into mind. Yeah.
All right. So our topic tonight is going to be the historical roots of horror tropes. And June is going to talk with us about that. And June has a lot to say about it. And we're very excited because this is, I think, honestly, one of the most interesting subjects we've done. But before we get to that, how about some recommendations? Melissa, you want to start us off?
Oh, sure. I have one that I didn't think of until right before we started tonight, because I've been really busy, too. My sister's here visiting from Denver right now, and she's into creepy places, so I've been doing a lot of, searching to kind of bring her to some cool, local cemeteries and stuff.
Nice.
And it reminded me of a group called Upstate Horror. It's a little bit of a local recommendation, but if you're anywhere in New England, then this could come in handy. Upstate Horror, I'm just going to say, I recommend looking at their Facebook page or their Twitter, because their website is not good. Especially if you are a bit of a techie person like the three of us are. The website drives me crazy. But if you follow them on Facebook or on Twitter, what they do is they kind of give you ongoing updates on haunted houses, events, horror conventions, creepy places that you should check out. They just published a list of drive-in movie theaters around New York. And I've seen them cover, like I said, multiple places basically all around New England. So it's a resource. It's a great resource to follow, especially if you're going to be visiting the area and you want to find some creepy places to go or see what's happening in the horror community around upstate. Yeah.
So I have a question, though. If you were scouting out cool cemeteries and stuff to take your sister to, did you take her to the one that makes the cider? Because,
No, we haven't been down in the city. We've been, I'm about an hour and a half outside the city. Yeah. So there's lots and lots of stuff up here around me. And she's a craft beer fanatic, so we've been going to a lot of breweries. So I didn't really want to drive down to Brooklyn. Yeah. I'm drinking coffee tonight so that I can stay awake and do this with you guys, because I already had all of my drinks today.
That's funny.
So, yeah, no, but I actually told her about it, and I will make it down there at some point to check that out, Jackie.
Nice. Yeah. Sierra, what do you got for us?
I want to talk about this illustrator that lives in Seattle who I have a huge art crush on. Her name is Pam Wishbow. And she does mostly, I think, screen printing kind of stuff. And she's been published in, like, Bitch Magazine, Bust Magazine, Seattle Weekly, a bunch of places. And she's just, like, a super cool person. I really love her illustrations, and the color palettes she uses are always pretty monochromatic or just a couple of different colors, but they all work really well together. And her spooky ones are the best. Like, there's a print that she did called The Fear, which is...
I was just looking at that one.
It's cool. It's like a bunch of hands playing with a Ouija board. So she just seems like a very, like, spooky, cool person who I think y'all should go follow.
Nice.
How do you spell her last name?
Wishbow.
Wishbow.
W-I-S-H-B-O-W. But yeah, she does lots of, like, cute people and good skulls.
I recognize the style. I swear I've probably seen it like a bunch of times and haven't realized that's who it was.
Yeah. Cool. It's fun because since it's July now, all the October and Halloween themed tumblers are like, it's close enough. So my Tumblr feed has been like all full of Halloween kind of illustration stuff. And I've seen her pop up a couple times this week. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really love her. But I never think of like recommending it. So
what you're saying is it's that time of year again where I might actually want to pay attention to Tumblr.
Yes.
Okay. I'll fire up the old Tumblr account. So, June, I know you have a couple recommendations for us.
Let's hear it. And the first one, I suppose, is kind of broad, but it occurred to me the other day, the film adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower is coming out soon.
Ooh, yeah.
So if anybody hasn't delved into those books or even the graphic novels, because Stephen King oversees a lot of that, too, and has thrown in some Easter eggs there, do it before the film comes out. I cannot urge that enough. It's such a neat universe that he's created in those books.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, kind of a sci-fi, western, horror. There's so much going on, so you gotta do that.
Melissa, and the other... aren't you a fan of the Dark Tower series?
No.
Oh, I thought I remembered. I thought I remembered hearing you say.
I might be the only one that's not. Maybe I'll give it another try soon. I tried it years and years ago, and I couldn't get through it. But it's a big commitment, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't started it yet because it's so much.
I think that the fourth book, which is a lot of people's favorite, for me, that's kind of where the story hits a big slump, and that was hard for me to get past. The Wizard in Glass, that one. Mm. And my other recommendation, big one that I want to put out there, is a movie that I came across from 1977, a Japanese film. The English title of it is House. And it is the best I can describe it is a psychedelic haunted house movie, but after viewing it, it's also worth Googling it. There's an article written about it. I think it's called something like You'll Never See the Strangest Horror Movie the Same Way Again, but it gives some interesting historical context for the film that isn't readily apparent the first time you watch it.
That sounds interesting.
We still have to get on that Japanese horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a topic that's been on our list literally since we started doing this. We'll get there.
Oh, there's a lot of ground to cover. Yeah,
yeah, it's intimidating.
Believe in us, we'll get there. Okay, well, I only have one recommendation, and it's kind of a lukewarm one. I'm not going to sugarcoat it here. It's a movie called Demonic. Have we talked about this before at all?
I don't think so.
I've not heard of it.
Well, then I don't know where I heard of it from, because it just kind of popped up in our library. But it's a movie about a demon possession. And no, the reason I'm recommending it instead of just blowing right by it is it's got a lot going for it. And it has like some really fun, surprising twists in it. But there's, like, this side story of these two cops that I guess are in love or some shit. And, like, I guess they work together sometimes. And it's really distracting. And they're such bad actors. And it really detracts from the entire story. But if you can get past these cops being dumb, then the rest of the movie is actually, it's kind of fun. It's a little bit cheesy, but, you know, that fun horror cheesy that we all kind of love. So that's Demonic, and if you like demon possessions, I'd recommend checking it out a little bit.
Also, I know you and I are both, like, super blown away by Twin Peaks right now.
Oh, my God. Oh.
That last episode was crazy.
Right. And there's no new episode tonight. I remember.
Yeah. I think stupid I blocked that out of my July. Head that there's none tonight. That sucks. But yeah, that last episode, that was insane. That was, like, I see a lot of people being like, what the fuck was that? But
was it?
It was very Lynchian. But I don't know. I felt like a lot of it actually had symbolism you could track throughout the most recent series. I didn't think it was that hard to follow. But I don't know. A lot of people are very upset about it, which I really just think is funny.
For what it's worth, I keep hearing that viewing the missing pieces is very important. That's on, I guess, the last Blu-ray edition. I think it's over an hour of footage that was taken out of the Fire Walk With Me film. And you noticed on the new season that David Bowie's character is referenced a few times.
Yeah.
I do know that in the missing pieces, we see a little bit more of Bowie's character. So something to look into.
I didn't know that existed.
We'll definitely have to watch that.
I was going to say, I keep seeing everybody speculating as to who the young couple is and the girl who gets the creature in her mouth.
Oh, yeah,
my favorite speculation so far is that she's Log Lady.
Ooh.
And it works out with the timing, and I guess there's a bit in the, like, history of Twin Peaks book about Log Lady had, for some reason, like, some medical records or something from that time. She said that she had scabs on her knees, which the character in that scene has some scabs on her knees, so that's, like, some people dove deep and, like, found that connection.
They really did, damn.
Yeah.
That would be cool. And also, I think we should just go ahead and put it out there here and now that Audrey Horne is probably the millionaire.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And when it's revealed, we're going to come on here and be like, see, we told you so. So just expect that. Okay, so you guys ready to get into this topic? You want to take a break real quick?
I'm ready. I'm so excited.
Horror stories tend to get passed through the years in a lot of forms, but roots go back surprisingly far. Tonight we have a true lover of history on to tell us the amazing foundations of horror in ancient history. June Gregory has studied history and classics at UNCA, studied mortuary customs, and ghost lore within these fields. Ghosts and haunted house films are some of her favorite genres of the horror, and she has, among her pets, spiders, which creeps me out to no end, June, still to this day, and flesh-eating beetles.
Oh, cool.
June is an old friend of mine. We go back, seriously, at least as far back as high school, and I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but there, at least in my life, there are always these people that keep coming back into your life. Like, you never intentionally pull away from them to begin with, but, you know, your life grows and you grow apart. But somehow, these certain people just keep gravitating toward each other. And June is like that for me. Like, seriously, every few years, it's like, June, how are we in the same spot again? This is amazing! So, this has been our friendship throughout, God, almost 20 years now, I swear.
It's crazy. We started in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And I'm so pleased to be on here. Thank you for this.
Thank you for joining us. We're so excited about what you have to teach us tonight. We're basically kind of looking at it as a fun academic lecture here. We're excited.
Ready to be good students.
So just to jump into this, so many of the horror tropes that we have, witches, werewolves, necromancers, all of these things can be found in ancient Greece and Rome. What really interests me and what I'd like to focus on tonight is the haunted house story.
Ooh.
All the tropes that are in your classic haunted house recipe, you can find them all over 2,000 years ago. The first trope that I'd like to discuss is one of the most obvious things about the haunted house story, and yet it deserves attention for that very reason, and that's the gothic setting of the house. And by that I mean the house is in a remote place, it's ramshackle, nobody's living there, it's run down, and often for sale at a very reasonable price. and that real estate feature shows up in the ancient world too. It's
really
neat. Yeah. Huh. So it's neat to trace that story. It shows up in various forms in the Middle Ages. You know, Shakespeare uses it, Oscar Wilde. We see it in Gothic literature, and then it jumps into cinema at the very dawn. You know, the first horror film by the first film director, Georges Méliès, was a haunted house film entitled The Haunted Castle.
Ooh. Yeah.
So one of our best examples of the ghost story, Pliny the Younger is writing a letter about a haunted house in Athens. And it's in a remote area. Nobody will live there. The house is beautiful, but it's just run down. Mm-hmm. Along comes a philosopher named Athenodorus. And he's curious about the property, looks into it. He sees how cheap it is. He hears that the house is so haunted that it kills people of terror.
The
ghost,
wow.
The ghost that appears in the night begins with a sound that's like the clashing of iron and rattling of chains, and it gets louder and louder. And then the ghost appears, and he's emaciated, he's dirty, long hair and beard, and he's shaking his chains, and he's trying to get the person to follow them or beckon to them somehow. And people are so terrified by this that every time they close their eyes in the daylight, they see this face. They can't eat, they can't sleep, they die or flee the house. So, Athenodorus, the philosopher, moves into the property, and he is not afraid. The first night he's in there, he waits for the ghost. Sure enough, these manifestations occur. The ghost shows up, and Athenodorus appears bored. He says, "You need to let me finish what I'm working on, and I'll follow you." Hmm. The ghost waits, and then vanishes after Athenodorus follows him for a little while. When the sun comes up the next day, the philosopher has people help him dig in the spot where the ghost disappears. Sure enough, there's a body, and it's tied up in chains, and the corpse is removed, given proper burial rites. The haunting ends. You find this very story, you know, ancient Greece, Rome. You find it in a lot of tales of saints and famous bishops throughout the medieval period. Of course, by that time, the ghost is replaced by a devil who has been cast out with the help of the Lord.
So,
Of course.
Yes, of course.
Does it seem like the transition between ghosts and more religious sort of hauntings is really there as religion co-opting that kind of thing as sort of a way to get people to believe more in the religion itself?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Taking credit for the spook.
And there's even contemporary documents that talk about how these vernacular pagan traditions are being used and reworked a little bit to help convert people.
Like, in what ways?
Well, and St. Augustine actually talked about this a lot. He did not like these ghost stories and actually didn't like them always used as more moral exemplar. The name of a famous saint is not coming to mind right now. But anyway, they're used to show people that the power of the Lord is so great that it can drive out these pagan ghosts, these pagan forces.
Lame,
yes. And you know, that kind of switch from the ghostly into the demonic is something that's happening now, I think, in haunted house cinema, but we'll get to that. So, getting back to this gothic setting, at the very dawn of cinema, these early short films, most of them are about haunted houses. You have Georges Méliès, Segundo de Chamon, haunted hotel scenes where there's spectral forces preparing plates of food. A lot of them are pretty silly, but they do have that setting of the old abandoned house.
It seems like the haunted hotel kind of thing was a much bigger trope back in the early days of cinema.
Absolutely. It shows up a lot in the 19-teens and 1920s.
I wonder why that is.
Not sure.
Now it seems like the haunted story is more intriguing almost to take place in an active area.
Absolutely, or even something that's more mundane, you know, that doesn't seem like it would be riddled with ghosts.
Yeah.
that place is just lousy with ghosts.
So when you get into the 1920s, there's a lot of these kind of ghost comedies that are very slapstick and have a lot of people cowering under sheets and things like that. And they're always in a, you know, ramshackle haunted house. In the 40s, you have these romantic haunted house movies that draw from the Gothic, like Wuthering Heights is a really big film that's been adapted so many times. I saw that PBS has made a miniseries starring Tom Hardy of Wuthering Heights recently. Yeah, so that was an interesting thing to find.
It's unexpected.
Yeah, in the Amazon. Yeah.
It's very unexpected.
So the Gothic manse, it stays popular until the 70s. When you get into the 80s, the haunted house takes a shift into houses that are a little more familiar. Okay, 1979, you have the Amityville Horror. It's a scary house, but it's not, you know, it's not a sprawling mansion. You've got Poltergeist, which takes place in the suburbs. You know, things like that.
Suburbs are creepy as they are. So.
They are. And you start seeing other haunted locations, you know, as we're getting closer toward the new millennium. You've got ghost ships, you've got hotels like The Shining, you've got haunted spaceships, Event Horizon. So even though we're looking at new places to haunt, like orphanages and schools, we always come back to this Gothic haunted house. Think about the turn of the century, The Others, and what a big success that film was.
Yeah.
Recently, we had a Crimson Peak, classic haunted house film. There, Steven Spielberg has been playing around with doing a remake of Turn of the Screw, which is a Gothic film that's been used for a lot of films.
I don't think I know that film.
Well, it was used, I guess the best example of that would be a film from, I think, 1961 called The Innocents. And that is the best film for creepy little children. Highly recommended.
Oh, I think actually one of our guests whose episode never aired, Jacob Strunk, was highly recommending The Innocents.
It's one of my all-time favorite films.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, so no matter what, we return to this old, sprawling, decrepit mansion. We just can't get enough of it, and I'm glad.
Yeah. It's definitely an imagery that I find myself drawn to a lot. I don't know about you guys.
All
Melissa
right.
And Sierra, you're awfully quiet over there.
I just don't want to interrupt the good stories.
Being good students. Listening.
Well, you guys, let me know when you're ready for me to get into the next trope. I don't know how much time we have. You'll let me know if I get to rambling.
Go for it. Just go right on ahead. We'll chime right. in and keep going there, and we've got plenty of time.
We're good at interrupting when we have things to say.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we interrupt a lot.
So the second trope that I want to explore is that the haunting is not what it seems. It's not a ghost. It's actually human subterfuge, or worst case scenario, it's a demon or some kind of evil dimension that's opened up into a house.
Can we call this one the Scooby-Doo trope?
Perfect. Yes. Perfect.
There we go.
So the Scooby-Doo trope is another one. You can go back 2,000 years and you're going to find it in the theaters of ancient Greece and Rome. One of the best-known examples was by the Roman playwright Plautus. It's a play called Mostellaria, which means the haunted house. So a guy has been away from his home for years. He's been traveling, and he comes back, and his slave is racing around the house saying he cannot come in. He's got to flee the house. There's an absolute catastrophe. The slave says that if he had a year to tell him of all the scary things that happened, it wouldn't be enough time.
Oh, wow.
What the slave tells Theopropides, the owner of the house, is that his son was sleeping in the house and was visited by a ghost. The ghost had reached what would have been his normal lifespan and was about to begin terrorizing the house unless he was dealt with properly. What's really going on, though, is that the son has trashed the house. He's got hookers, he's got alcohol everywhere, crazy people. Dad can't come in and find out what's going on. But the play is working off of a pre-existing idea of the haunted house. You know, these ideas have to be already well ingrained for the humor of this to work.
Right.
So our Scooby-Doo trope. At the beginning of cinema, looking into the 1920s, films like The Cat and the Canary, The Old Dark House, The Ghost Breakers, all of these are your classic Scooby-Doo setup. The person has, you know, for whatever reason, behind the scenes, pulling the strings with the skeletons. They've often trying to get some kind of inheritance, win a bet, fake their death, all kinds of nefarious reasons. And they're usually comical. You get into 1940, an Alfred Hitchcock film called Rebecca, which I'm not going to say too much about. It doesn't fit in the demon or Scooby-Doo category. It's maybe even a little more interesting than that, worth watching. When you get into the 1940s, people want their hauntings to be a little bit genuine, so the humor element kind of fades out. It does pop up again. 1983, The House of the Long Shadows is a good example. A pretty scary movie from 1973 called The Legend of Hell House has an interesting real story of what's going on. A newer film that I highly recommend, and it's on Netflix now, called Housebound, is another case of these, and that's actually a film from New Zealand. As well, Peter Jackson highly recommends it.
Housebound's really good, and it's kind of funny, too. It is good.
And one note about these Scooby-Doo films from the earlier 1900s, they came about at a time where people remember stage magic and fake seances and spiritualism, and there's still a lot of memory of frauds and seance exposés that kind of play into these films as well. So as we get to the close of the last century, the demonic kind of steps in our haunted house movies. It's scarier than a ghost. Sometimes the ghost is still around, but it's actually warning the inhabitants of the home of something that's much worse. You know, in Amityville, there's a secret history of the murders of the DeFeo family, but it's revealed that there's an even older history of Satan worship and things of that nature. 1977, The Sentinel. It's a really terrifying haunted house film, but what's really going on, even scarier. House, a movie from 1986. There's much more going on than ghosts. There's a ghostly, evil, demonic dimension that's opened in the home itself. The Blumhouse production company has really, really turned up the dial on this idea. You've got the Insidious franchise, which brings in demons along with the ghost.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, Paranormal Activity, a great example of this. The Sinister movies as well, I think that, yeah, the demonic entity, the Bogghoul.
Oh, they also did Get Out.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I love that film, by the way.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, and I don't see that this is slowing down anytime soon. It's terrifying, and it's very popular with audiences.
Yeah, it seems to lend itself to good twists. Like, it's definitely the kind of trope that allows the audience to be tricked into thinking it's one thing and then it becoming something much crazier and more engaging.
Absolutely.
Also, one that we talked about recently that I was just reminded of is The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
I've not heard of that.
Ooh, you would love it.
It has a great definitely twist to it, too.
Autopsy of Jane Doe. Look into that.
I didn't realize how many of the movies that we've talked about recently were Blumhouse movies.
Oh, man.
Like Creep and Hush and Split, and it's kind of crazy.
Split was Blumhouse?
Uh-huh. I had no idea. Well, damn, Blumhouse, get it. That's awesome. Anyway, you were saying.
Well, that's about it for the second section. And, you know, within those two variations, there's, you know, a lot of twists that can take on. Who is the actual person doing the haunting? That's another twist we see a lot, without giving away any of the films that use that to their effect. I have a third trope, and that's about something that I'll just call the ghost fighter, or somebody who is able to lend their expertise to intervene in the haunting.
Oh, this is Sierra's favorite category.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ghost hunters.
So, in the ancient world, often we see it's a philosopher who will come into the haunted house and use their knowledge, sense of calm, to rationalize with the ghost, figure out what's really going on. In the second century CE, there is a near repeat of the story given by Pliny the Younger by Lucian, the satirist, and he tells us about the philosopher Argonautus, who goes to a haunted house in Corinth, and he's able to subdue a ghost with Egyptian spells. Getting into the medieval period again, we have priests, bishops, and saints who go into these haunted locations, and with the power of the word of the Lord, they're able to, you know, wrap things up.
The power of Christ compels you.
Indeed, exactly. When you get into films, you know, you still, there's often a religious or spiritual figure that takes care of things, or some kind of medium or clairvoyant who is born with this gift that can communicate with these ghosts. And then you have, and we're seeing a lot more of this, the paranormal researcher or scientist. There's a film from 1944 called The Uninvited, which for me really marks a break in the haunted house chronology and going to more serious and enduring themes. In this film, we have a medium coming in and holds a seance, which helps uncover some of the secrets of the house. We have clairvoyant people. Okay, The Shining, 1982, Doc Halloran, who uses his gift of the shine to kind of come in and help Danny and his mother at the last minute, although paying the ultimate price for that. Yeah. 1963, The Haunting, is based off a really great novel, Shirley Jackson, The Haunting of Hill House, I believe it's called. And this was a movie that was redone in the late 90s with Catherine Zeta-Jones. Paranormal researcher brings a team of people into this haunted house and kind of sets them up. And while the people are supposed to be doing research about ghosts, he's actually researching them and, you know, what's going on with their responses to the haunted activity. Poltergeist. Yeah, Poltergeist is a great example. You have both a medium and paranormal researchers working on the house trying to figure out what's going on. The Legend of Hell House is another movie where there's a team of paranormal researchers going in to figure out what's going on from 1973. And there's a mix of ingrained medium clairvoyant skills and also paranormal technology, you know, ghost hunting tech, things like that. More modern films where you see this are films like The Innkeepers, Apartment 143, Grave Encounters. Of course, we've got Insidious. That's a great ghost fighting team right there. And I think that the combination of the clairvoyant woman and the two ghost fighting buddies with their gear is part of what makes that franchise so successful.
Yeah, for sure.
The Conjuring and the Annabelle films, you've got the real-life ghost hunters, I guess, the Warren couple into that. And I think that having paranormal researchers and having ghosts seen through different devices like even cell phones or video cameras, using GPS, things like this, I think that they help these films translate to modern audiences, maybe even make them more believable.
Make them feel more real when somebody is there saying, I have credentials and I'm backing this up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're going to be getting some of this soon. I think there's an Amityville movie out right now where there's going to be some secret footage found and another team of ghost hunters moving in. Mm. That movie came out a week or two ago.
Oh, really? Which one?
Amityville, The Awakening.
Oh, right.
They've been putting that movie off for years. And it's...
Huh. The Awakening.
I believe it's finally out. Among those movies where people are coming in and doing research, I would like to give a shout out to a movie I found on Amazon Prime that was surprisingly fresh and enjoyable. It's called Spirit Stalkers.
Hmm.
And it looks, you start the film and it just looks, ugh. It's a little questionable, but it's. I think it's one of the best that I've seen in the haunted house genre.
What's the premise? Tell us about it. Sounds cool.
So The Spirit Stalkers is one of those TV shows where there's a team of ghost researchers that goes into haunted houses and sees what's going on. People call in about disturbances. They show up, 30-minute show. The problem with The Spirit Stalkers is that the ghost hunting crew is so rational and so good about finding natural causes for these manifestations, there's never a haunting. It's always dismissed. And their ratings are starting to plummet. Well, then they get into a house where there really does seem to be something going on. And beyond that, I'd be giving away some interesting twists and turns, but do check it out.
That sounds right up my and Aunt Sierra's alley here, for sure.
Highly recommended.
Did you see that one on Netflix?
That one I found on Amazon Prime.
Oh, Amazon, okay.
And it still is actually in the feed. I watched it again the other night. So I have one more trope that I picked, and I picked this one because, again, it can be found deep, deep in our past. And this is the idea of the haunting being caused by some kind of secret history or hidden crime, a reason for the haunting, if you will, you know, something that the ghost needs dealt with in order to move on. And I'd say that in 9 times out of 10 in any ghost or haunted house movie, this is going to figure in some way.
So it's like the unfinished business kind of thing?
Exactly. In the ancient world, in Greece and Rome, there was a very rich vocabulary for all the different kinds of ghosts. And oftentimes the descriptive was the manner of its death. Okay, there was a kind of ghost that was a body that was unburied. One kind of ghost caused when a person dies before their time. That was the kind of ghost that was used in the play Mostellaria that was invented to keep the guy out of the trashed home. There's ghosts that arise from a violent death. Sometimes ghosts appear because they weren't given proper burial rites or their tomb wasn't attended to properly.
I wish we had terms for that many ghosts now. That's
awesome. We should, yeah.
I had no idea. That's so cool.
And they make for great, you know, band names and song titles, you know, in the metal world.
What are the actual names? Do you know the names?
Some of them are... of a Greek ways that I cannot pronounce. I do not know ancient Greek very well.
Oh, how dare you, June.
I know. Just Latin. And you get into the medieval period, and this unfinished business was that the body was a sinner, and they need somebody to go to a church or something and pray for all their sins so they can go on to the next world. You know, again, we've got a little bit of a religious agenda there. Mm-hmm. So looking into our haunted house films, again, we can see a 1944 film called The Uninvited, a point where this trope reappears, a secret history that has to do with this house that's being haunted, and there's several ghosts within the home. Beyond that, I mean, you see it in almost all ghost movies. See things that come to mind. Amityville, there's like a double secret history there. Poltergeist, you know, you've got the Indian burial ground. Great film from the 80s called The Changeling. As in with The Changeling, oftentimes there's a tragic story of a child whose death, you know, was unknown, or he lived a tormented and abused life.
It really seems like kids haunting or kids being involved in a haunting at all makes everything like 10 times scarier. It always does.
Absolutely. Well, even you see that actually in that movie, The Innocents. That's, I think, one of the first times when I can see that children are really used as a plot device for that. And we've got Stir of Echoes, The Grudge. And these children also feature in a lot of these Japanese movies, but that's subject for another day.
Yeah.
More recent films, The Lady in Black, The Disappointments Room, The Orphanage, The Messengers is a good case of that. Film that came out last year, Bad Ben, another thing that I found on Amazon. Blumhouse Films, again, is really running with this motif as well.
Gotta give props to Blumhouse here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had no idea. Like, I never look at production companies. I tend to look at directors more than anything. But damn, that's, yeah.
Well, it's been about 5 or 6 years since I did any research about haunted house films. And just in that space of time, I mean, just looking at the past few years, it's all Blumhouse productions. It's amazing. But they do have a rich variety within those. And for me, I think that's one of the biggest appeals about haunted house films is that secret history, that story that you have to unearth.
Yeah, I agree. So which, if you had to pick a favorite, which would be yours in that kind of genre?
Oh, what a good question. Think on that a second.
How about you guys? Sierra, Melissa, you have any favorite secret history stories?
The Messengers is one of my favorite, actually, that she named.
Remind me which one The Messengers is, because I feel like I've seen that, but I don't remember which one it is.
It's got a very young Kristen Stewart in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a bit of a sleeper for me because I don't like Kristen Stewart normally, and I didn't think the movie was going to be that great, but I love the story behind it, and I think it was one of the earlier films that uses that kind of idea of like the ghost kind of running on the ceiling and kind of creeping around in the background and has that very almost like spider-like movements about them.
Oh, yeah.
It was about a family that moved into a farmhouse. They meet a man who comes along and wants to offer to help around the house, wants to help around the farm, and creepy things are happening inside the house. I don't want to give anything away too much, but...
I enjoyed that film as well, and again, I'm not a big fan of Kristen Stewart either, but I was pleasantly surprised by that.
That was also a remake from an Asian film originally.
Oh, I had no idea.
But I think the American version was done by the same director who did the... I want to say it was Japanese was the original.
Going back to the question of my favorite, backstory, secret history, I keep going back to The Uninvited, and I have a lot of nostalgia from that film. I watched it very young, but I do like that. Again, it's one of those haunted house films that really marks a point to the future, and all the tropes from that we've kept. I also liked, I remember liking as a kid, The Lady in White. I remember that one, but that, I don't think that was a sad movie.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
A very young Lucas Haas, I think is how you say his name in that film.
Oh, I definitely saw this as a kid.
Yeah.
It came out in 1988. Locked in the cloakroom after school as a Halloween prank, Frankie meets the ghost of a young neighborhood girl who had been found strangled to death 10 years before. Interesting.
Sounds like The Ghost Next Door in Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah, yes. It really does.
You know, I guess you could probably call The Poltergeist a secret history film, too.
Absolutely.
That's definitely an ultimate favorite of mine. I think The Poltergeist is the reason why I'm forever scared of ghost sounds and film.
Yes. And I really loved in the remake, I was surprised when they showed the ghostly realm, the visuals for that I really enjoyed. Did you like that?
I don't remember what it looked like. I remember feeling a little bit disappointed by the new one that it didn't portray the same like level of weirdness as the first one, but...
Ambient creepiness.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't remember if I even saw the remake. I don't think I did.
It's hard to hit gold twice, especially with horror films.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah. I think there are those out there that the remakes end up being better than the original sometimes, but they're pretty rare.
Don't tell James Wan that. That's like his thing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I thought a movie that just popped into mind, you know, Stir of Echoes was a really good example, I think, of that secret history. And it was, you know, in a normal house in a normal neighborhood, you know, is very unassuming. That's one I have to revisit again.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that, but I remember it being really, really fun.
Yeah.
Now I think about it, I think this secret history might be one of my favorites. I'm kind of thinking of all the examples, and it's like, yeah, I tend to like really enjoy a movie that there's an explanation behind why things are happening, and it has to do with some kind of history that no one was aware of.
Mm. Yeah, like what are some examples that come to mind?
All the ones that we're talking about.
Other than those.
Y'all seen The Orphanage? Oh. That was a Guillermo del Toro movie. Yes, that was a good one. I've heard The Devil's Backbone, which I think takes place in a school.
I was just about to say that one is amazing, too.
And, of course, Crimson Peak, there was some nasty secrets there.
Yeah,
during this entire conversation, I keep thinking about the show Supernatural and how they have, like, really, really pulled from these tropes, like, these very specific background tropes. So very... I don't even know the word I'm thinking of here. Like, really clung on to these tropes and run with it kind of thing. I don't know. I don't think any of you actually watch Supernatural.
I'm waiting to binge that. It's highly recommended, but I've been told that I need to do it at a time when I can really dig in.
Yeah, and plus, like, the first couple of seasons are so terrible. So you got to get through those
first. Good to know.
Yeah.
You know, the American Horror Story, the different seasons of that, I'm just thinking about, well, especially the first one that's, you know, The Haunted House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's definitely employing these as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
The Asylum season did, too.
Oh, yeah.
With the whole kind of doctor in the basement and all that.
Yeah. God, what is the name of it? Oh, The Conjuring was really good at that, too, where you think it's the ghosts of the ladies who have killed their children there to begin with, and then... They go really deep into the history of the house and the property there.
Yeah, it's a great twist, and they're really building on the Conjuring stuff with the Annabelle movies, which, woo, scary dolls. I don't scare easy, but...
I can't remember what they said the third one is. I know there's a third one, like an actual Conjuring the Three coming out soon, right?
Oh, yeah. And I think in January, we're going to have another installation of the Insidious franchise.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, I like those.
I honestly felt like I would get sick of those by now, but I'm on board. I like the Insidious movies. So keep them coming.
And the jump scares where they get every time. Oh.
You know, what's interesting here is if you Google Conjuring 3, the very first post is from ChristianPost.com.
Oh!
just throwing that word out there.
Still trying to take credit for the scary stuff, huh?
For real. I kind of hope it's them saying, no, these aren't ghosts. They're demonic spirits. prey, and you won't have to face them.
That's right.
Well, I think that's it for the tropes that we have today. June, this has been really, really edifying and very awesome.
I've enjoyed it as well. It's been fun to pour through these notes again, like, you know, watch these old films, and it's a subject I'm really passionate about. You know, I think that one of the reasons these films are so effective is death is a universal fear that we all have, and I don't think we're ever going to know what it's like to be deceased, and that's a persistent anxiety. It works, and it will continue to.
Yeah, that fear of the unknown will always get you.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, it is something that we can't control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Another note, I just remembered there's going to be a new Flatliners, just thinking about the state of being deceased. I'm really excited about that. I think Ellen Page stars.
Very cool. And I know you have a little bit of recommended reading here. Do you want to tell us about a couple of them here?
Yeah, I've got a little list that I want to pull up. There are some authors who have really done some fascinating research. So Barry Curtis has written a book called Dark Places, The Haunted House in Film, a book from 2009. This just explores haunted house tropes, psychology behind it. He goes into some really interesting analysis of the psychology of the uncanny. And I would say that that's the overall theme of the book, but there's a lot of treatment given to Weimar era cinema in Germany, which isn't necessarily a lot of haunted house stories necessarily, but the imagery that they use.
Cool.
And how that affected these films. See, she's just listed as D. Felton. I believe it's Deborah Felton. Haunted Greece and Rome, Ghost Stories from Classical Antiquity is just an exhaustive research of all these haunted house stories written in chronological order with lots of footnotes and additional information, historical context, and teaches you a lot about ghost culture, ghost festivals, gods and goddesses that officiated the realms of the dead, rites for the dead, all these varieties of ghosts. Just really, really rich resource there.
Wow, that sounds like a killer resource.
Another one, and this one just focuses on Greece, but it talks a lot about necromancy and some fun things like that. Sarah Isles Johnson, Restless Dead, Encounters Between the Living and Dead in Ancient Greece. Murray Leader is the editor of a book called Cinematic Ghost, Haunting and Spectrality from Silent Cinema to the Digital Era. And a lot of the topics that I've went over can be found in much greater detail, especially the whole subject of how Blumhouse is changing the haunted house game, you know, with more of a shift into the demonic and paranormal researchers.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I have a few others on these, which if you'd like, you know, I can send it. You can post a link to that.
A list here.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely add this in the show notes because that sounds like some really awesome additional reading for our listeners here.
Yeah, we barely scrape the surface, especially when it comes to the ancient world. There's just a really, really well-articulated belief in ghosts and skepticism, which some of these books treat as well. Like today, there is a wide range of opinions on the afterlife.
Definitely going to bug you to come back and tell us more.
I would love it. You give me anything historical to look at, I'll run with it. I would love that.
Henceforth known as our go-to historian.
I am honored and very pleased.
Do you guys have any questions at all for June?
I don't think so. That was a lot of fun, June. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was fascinating.
If I may, a question for y'all.
Well, let's hear it.
Scariest haunted house movie, or the one that really just affected you, that really sticks out in your memory?
Hmm. Oh, gosh. Oh, that's a big
haunted
question.
Haunted house movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, now let's broaden that. We can just say ghosts, too.
All right. Honestly, the most recent one, or rather, the one that gave me the biggest jump scare, I would say, was a more recent one, and that was the first Insidious movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually, like, the first movie that really made me jump in my seat in years.
Yes.
So that's probably why I hold those so dear to my heart there. But, yeah, I'm going to go with that. Insidious.
It got me that figure lurking near the bed and the red face. Yeah. Oh!
It was the one right behind his head.
Oh, yeah. It was, like, at the dinner table or something.
Yeah, that's
in broad
like,
daylight.
Really,
yes.
I'm pretty sure I shrieked when that happened.
I did.
It was so unexpected.
That reminds me, my answer will be, it's a kind of a documentary called The Nightmare. It's on Netflix. It's about the one about sleep paralysis. That one is definitely spooky as far as like what's real and what's science and then also what's like kind of the curtain between our realm and the spirit or demonic realm kind of being parted.
Well, I get night terrors occasionally and I could not finish it.
Yeah, I've had a couple episodes of sleep paralysis and I'm kind of terrified to watch that. But I also really want
really
to.
It's really fun because it's very, very like, ooh, this is real and it's happening.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I'm going to have to go back a little bit far, I think, because I feel like the most recent horror movies that I've really enjoyed have either centered around what turns out to be, like, demons and things like that, or, like, more psychological horror.
Ah, yes.
And ghost stories.
So, but that would fit into kind of the Scooby-Doo
show. It would, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But your question was ghost or haunted house stories. So The Grudge is probably one that immediately pops into my head got under my skin pretty badly. Like, really badly. I haven't actually been able to see the sequel to that because the first one scared me too much.
No.
Which had a lot to do with the sounds in the movie, less so than the story itself.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And The Others, which you mentioned earlier, is probably one of my favorite kind of like surprise ghost stories. I love the story. Yeah. I love the atmosphere. The cinematography in that film was beautiful.
Yeah, that one was really well done.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how well done that one was.
I think that one was an instant classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman was amazing in it.
She really did great.
I love the way that film sort of like really brought it back to a very traditional classic ghost story. There wasn't tons and tons of special effects or anything. It really relied a lot on tension and sound and atmosphere.
How about you, June? What would be your favorite in that realm?
Well, it's not a haunted house film, but The Ring. It just stuck to me for days. And I haven't seen, I know there was something, I guess like a third installment of that here recently. I did not watch it, but that was really powerful. There was something, and it wasn't just the imagery, there was something about the fact that it was a videotape, and you watched it, and you didn't know it was going to happen. I mean, that just,
Like it's something you could stumble on and not realize what you're getting yourself
Make
into.
Make a grave mistake.
Yeah, and I guess that's, yeah. Yeah, and then we see that things like, I know a lot of the VHS movies, and we've seen that repeated a lot, but I think that The Ring is the first time I remember that. You know, it's
definitely the first time it was that dynamic, like that in your face.
And it also had a good, like, reason for the haunting.
Absolutely, that's that secret history, and a child in peril, you know, that tormented spirit.
I actually just recently rewatched that, because I think there's a window of horror movies that I watched, but I guess I didn't really pay that much attention to, or maybe I smoked too much pot in those days, or... but, like, I feel like I didn't quite get the full effect, so I recently rewatched The Ring, because that was in there, too, and I was actually, like, really surprised by how much I didn't remember about it. I mean, especially for its time, it was... incredibly well done. Yeah. Another one in that realm is The Descent.
Oh, I'm going to have to rewatch that one. The Descent is so good.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that. Does that deal with the cave in Central America?
I don't need to write it's that in one Central down. America, but they're like cave exploring and there's creatures Spelunking. Down there. Yeah.
Ooh,
and it's all female cast, which is really great.
Oh, it is neat.
I guess we should wrap this up, even though I kind of don't want to.
We can all just keep talking about horror movies.
Oh, I'm happy to revisit this subject anytime.
Well, June, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
it was my pleasure.
Where can people find you online if they want to check out you and your stuff?
So I only recently kind of stopped being a Luddite and got on Facebook again, and I have an Instagram account I haven't even started using yet, but
I didn't even know you had an Instagram
There's
account.
Nothing on there, but it's funny, my name on my Instagram is June Mostellaria, after the haunted house.
Nice.
Word for haunted house in Roman theater. So I'm on Facebook as June Gregory, and you might be able to somehow link to my page or something, but I would love to interact with anybody, talk about ghosts and horror movies.
And I can definitely attest that June posts some really fun horror links too, so if you follow her on there, then I can guarantee you'll find some cool stuff.
I'm really looking forward to the Winchester.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The which one? What now?
They're doing a movie about the Winchester house?
Who is? What now? What's going on?
I think it's a movie.
Winchester House.
You don't know about the Winchester House?
No.
Oh my goodness. So the woman who, I forget her first name, but she's married to the guy who like started the Winchester rifle business.
Sarah Winchester.
Thank you. So she's convinced that the spirits of everybody who's been killed with her husband's guns haunt her. So she lives in California. She like made this huge mansion and she just never stopped building it. And she did all these like staircases to nowhere and like rooms that don't make sense to try to like confuse the spirits. And there's just like hundreds of rooms and you can go on tours of it. I think there was a Ghost Adventures episode where they went there too. There's tons of stuff amazing. Like that. Yeah, it's really interesting. And she seems like a very tragic kind of character.
Yeah. Wow, and she's a real character. That's wow.
But I think they're doing a movie about it in some capacity. I'm not sure.
Caught my interest here. We'll definitely delve into that a little farther, I think. But for now, Siren to Scream is a member of the Mega Nerd Media family. Visit meganerdmedia.com for geek-related columns, reviews, interviews, and videos. You can reach us via email at sos@meganerdmedia.com, on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as Sirens of Scream. Sierra, where can people find you?
I'm at Sierra Houk, H-O-U-K.
And Melissa?
I'm at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram. And that's a wrap for this episode. We'll see you next time.